Bibles. First Matthew chapter 2, a couple verses beginning at verse 13. Now after the wise men had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." And then going to Matthew chapter 25, verse 35, the words of Jesus. "I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to the one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." This is God's word. And James Grunau will now speak to us.
Thank you, Laura and Marion and team and all of you folks at Olivet for inviting me back. It looks like I haven't worn out my welcome yet, so glad to see that. And it's a delight to be with you again this morning. It's been quite a week, hasn't it? Wednesday, I was the only one in the office for a while until another one of our members came in for a bit. Fortunately, I only have a 5-minute commute, so there was no excuse for me to work from home, and I had a good day of productivity there. Thank you for the opportunity to be here again this morning. Thank you for all that you do on behalf of refugees and for holding up the cause of a very marginalized and vulnerable people group in our community and indeed in our world. Thank you for your support again this past year. Some of you have given financially. Some of you have been involved in helping in various ways. Some of you have prayed for us, and we're just so grateful for all of the expressions of support and care and compassion that you have shown, really, to Jesus. And thank you for your involvement. We actually have, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but we actually have a staff person on Journey Home who attends your church. And Joanne Lee looks after our bookkeeping and our accounting and does a great job of that. And we're so glad for her competent service. And others of you are involved in many different ways. I want to do three parts this morning to our little talk. And I hope we have enough time to get through all of them. We want to do a little biblical reflection first and lay some foundation. Then we want to do a bit of an update on Journey Home and all of it and our partnership together and the need that's out there facing us as partners. And then I want to take you on a personalized refugee journey. So let's go to work. Christmas is just behind us, and this morning we read the story after the Christmas story. And as some of you may have seen this image that was floating around online around Christmas time, a bit of a jab probably at our neighbors to the south and some of the refugee family separation that was happening down at the southern border there. Well, in response to that image, someone had written an article a year ago, and it resurfaced. Relevant magazine brought that back again, and the article was by Tyler Huckabee, and it was called, "So Were Mary and Joseph Actually Refugees or What?" You can go online and get that if you're interested. It's a fairly short article, but I think somewhat informative. So here is a young couple with a small child and a crisis on their hands, having to flee their homeland. Does that sound vaguely familiar? We face it all the time in our office and in our Olivet Welcome Houses. Unsafe, killings, fleeing quickly at night, that was the plight of Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus. It was the plight of one of our refugee families as they shared a little bit of their story with me. They had been in Europe and had gotten back to their home country and were interrogated at the airport because of everything that was going on in their country. They got through that interrogation and thought maybe things would be okay, and then they received a letter asking him to appear at the police station. And they knew if he did, it would be game over. And so I'm not sure if it was exactly that night, but probably close to, they decided as a family, we're out of here. And they left and eventually found their way to Vancouver and to Journey Home, and we helped them with some settlement. Fleeing quickly at night. Tyler Huckabee in his article says actually that we get our word refugee from the Greek word that we read this morning, phuge, or to flee. You remember that part, Mary and Joseph and the child had to flee to Egypt. And he maintains that's actually where we get our word refugee from. So there it was for Mary and Joseph and a small child, a journey of probably at least 400 kilometers, which would take likely 10 to 15 days for them to flee all of those uncertainties, those threats, and indeed what eventually became those killings to save a child. Notice, and I think we all struggle with these things, don't we? Notice that God didn't stop the infanticide. But he did provide a way to spare Jesus from premature death. And notice also that Egypt didn't close their borders to this young refugee family. Sorry, you don't have a visa for Egypt. Sorry, you don't have the proper identity documents. Sorry, your papers aren't in order. We can't receive you or accept you. No, Egypt welcomed the family and provided for them for that next period, some think months, some think perhaps a couple of years. Here was Jesus, a stranger in these aspects of his life. And again, Chris Smith, another author of an article, said that Jesus really lives his whole life mirroring the history of Israel in his life. And thus, out of Egypt. Just as Israel was delivered out of Egypt those many hundreds and hundreds of years earlier. Just as his forefathers had experienced in their lives. So fast forward now to Jesus' ministry, which we picked up then in Matthew 25. And this very well-known passage of all of these actions that Jesus is encouraging us to take. Six different actions, if you count them, all of which are experienced by refugees. Does Jesus choose these particular six because he experienced them all in his life? Perhaps. I want us particularly to focus on verse 35. And here, I like the NIV or NASB translation because it says, I was a stranger and you invited or you took me in. And I think what a demonstration of compassion and care Jesus is calling us to. I was a stranger and you invited or you took me in. When he includes that part, I was a stranger, does he think of the times when he was a stranger? Does he reflect on his own experience of going to Egypt as that young child with his parents? Probably too young to remember, but likely being recounted the story of that experience by Mary and Joseph as they would tell him about having to flee to save his life. No doubt thinking about that experience as a stranger. So what does it mean to not take in the refugees, the strangers? It means actually that we reject Jesus. We are the innkeeper who has no room. We would be the Egypt that says, no, sorry, Joseph. We think you're going to take someone's job, actually. Or you might be an Israelite spy or terrorist. Or, you know what? We've reached our immigration quota for this year. There's no room left. But no, they took the opportunity to host God, just as we have the opportunity to welcome God into our lives. So to me, I think there's really two levels of inviting or taking in. First, there's the national level. Do we invite refugees and strangers into our country of Canada? Do we provide a way? And I'm pleased to say, yes, we do. And in fact, now that that the U.S. has downgraded their refugee settlement program, I think Canada actually became the top country in the world for settling refugees this past year of the sponsorship program. But could we do more? Absolutely. Second, on a second level, do we invite refugees into our community and into our homes and into our lives? Do we make a place for them? And this is the personal level that Jesus is inviting us into. I was struck with the last line of Huckabee's article, and it says this: people can argue the fine points about whether or not Jesus would have been considered a refugee during his ancient flight. But hear this: Jesus himself made it clear that he is manifested in every refugee we see on the news today. Jesus himself made it clear that he is manifested in every refugee we see on the news today. It is a refugee journey of 2,000 years. Jesus had that refugee journey as a young child himself. And now he takes that refugee journey through all of the thousands and millions of refugees who we encounter in our world today. A child appearing in the country of Egypt and now appearing in the form of the refugees that we encounter. I think sometimes actually as Christians we're not really sure what to do with Jesus' words, especially in what seems like a harsh context of judgment for those who don't. You as a church have seriously taken Jesus' words. And for many years now, even predating our partnership as Journey Home with all of it, you have provided a place and a home for refugees. You have invited and taken them in. Congratulations and thank you. But what is a refugee? And I think that's a fair question. What is a refugee as a category of people, but who are refugees as personalized faces and names? And I want us to look at just a quick definition this morning from the UN Convention, actually, so we know what we're talking about. Who and what is a refugee? A person who, owing to a well-founded fear of being persecuted for these reasons: race, religion, nationality, membership of a particular social group, political opinion, is outside of the country of his or her nationality and is unable to, or owing to such fear, is unwilling to avail himself or herself of the protection of that country. That's straight from the UN Convention. That's what a refugee is. And so, they will be asked a couple of questions at their hearing around all of those issues, but two questions in particular. Could you have sought protection from the harm that you were experiencing in your country? And secondly, could you have considered moving to another area of your country and having a flight alternative to where you were experiencing the persecution? Would the child Jesus and his family have passed those tests as a refugee family? Yes, they would have. They could not continue living where they were because wherever they were in the country of Israel at that time, the infanticide was going to be carried out. And they could not have sought the protection of the security because the security of that time was stacked against them. So yes, they would have been refugees in our definition. So let's look at three types of refugees this morning. Who are refugees and how do they come to Canada? Well, they come in basically three ways. They come, first of all, as government-sponsored refugees. In Canada, it determines a quota of refugees that they're going to bring over at the expense of the government and provide help and settlement for them. That's about 9,000 to 10,000 a year, somewhere in that area. Secondly, they come privately sponsored as refugees by groups of citizens, church groups, community groups who say, we want to sponsor a family from overseas and bring them to Canada and provide support for a minimum of 1 year. Those are sponsored refugees. All of that refugee determination is made outside of the country and they land here as permanent residents. But there's a third type, and that's the type of refugee that Journey Home and all of it have partnered together to assist. And those are asylum seekers or refugee claimants. And they are people who just show up. They're like Mary and Joseph that had to flee on a moment's notice. They're like that family I mentioned earlier who said, it's not safe for us to stay. We've got to get out of here immediately. And so they find a way. They put documentation together. They put together some financial resources and it provides a way for them maybe to get an airline ticket or to find a way of getting over the border somehow and arriving in Canada, and they're here to make a refugee claim. Their determination is made inside of the country, and we have an opportunity to give them a hearing, share their story, and determine whether or not they meet that official definition that we just talked about. That determination is made inside of Canada, and once they have been granted refugee status, then they can apply for permanent residency and eventually citizenship. So what kind of numbers are we talking about? Well, I found an interesting PowerPoint that I had used here 5 years ago. So notice the figures in 2015. In 2015, there were 59.5 million forcibly displaced people in our world, one in every 123 persons in the world. Notice what it is now in 2020. 70.8 million, one in every 110 people in the world, have been forcibly displaced from their home. So a lot of those folks have been forcibly displaced within their home country. Those who have had to flee their country and attend to a different country are actually refugees. You can't be a refugee within your home country. You have to be a refugee by leaving your country and going to a different nation. That number in 2015 was 19.5 million. And in 2020, we see the increase now to 25.9 million. 3.5 are refugee claimants, 3.5 million, or asylum seekers, the group that we work together with. That, friends, is the need. Now, those folks who are sponsored from various places, I want to just look at the numbers here locally. That's the global number. Our local number, in 2016, we saw that the number of asylum seekers or refugee claimants arriving in Metro Vancouver in 2016 was 1,335, and we see how it has increased significantly. When we put this graph together earlier on in 2019, we weren't sure of the final number, but we knew that it was rising significantly for 2019. So we guessed at 3,000 plus. Well, I just saw the numbers this week on the website, the government website, 3,775 refugee claimants arriving in BC, most to Metro Vancouver this past year. Almost triple from 2016. That's the opportunity that we have to reach out. Where do those, what kind of situations and environments are those refugees living in? Well, I had the chance to go to Lebanon, and we think Lebanon, Middle East, warm. Well, not everywhere in the country. And in the Bekaa Valley bordering Syria, this is what you run into in the wintertime. And here's people living in these makeshift tents, encountering snowstorms, and then when the snow melts, floods, with water running through their tent systems and them having, and I just watched a video this week that had been sent to me by an organization that I have connected with in Lebanon, and it showed the recent challenges that those people in the camps were facing. Most of those people are looking for sponsorship. They don't have the means to just show up and find their way to Canada, so they're looking for sponsorship. The few who do have maybe the means then have the opportunity to come and arrive in our country and to claim asylum here. So that's the need we have and that we are working on together. How have we been doing that as Journey Home and all of it? Well, in the past, Journey Home began as just a group of volunteers from a church home group, helping a few refugee families in a house provided by one of the couples in our home group. That was in 2005. Then we began to use market rate apartments and finding managers who were sympathetic to our cause, and we would find a few suites in the building and move some families in. But we had no refugee houses to utilize. We had no home base until 2012. And then there was a change in the management of the two houses next door to your church building, and we had the opportunity as Journey Home to take over the management of those houses. And since then, we've seen probably 200 to 300 refugees go through those two houses in the last 7.5 years. This past year, Journey Home Community was able to help 78 newly arriving refugees, not all through the Olivet houses, but probably the majority. It's been a wonderful partnership with a much aligned vision for what takes place there. Well, what does take place there, you ask? Well, we have transition housing there for families up to about 3 months. So a family moves in, as a family did on Friday, a Palestinian family coming to Canada to seek refugee protection. We help them move in, and now they're living there for hopefully about the next 3 months, letting them settle, get their feet on the ground, finding their way through some of the systems that we'll talk about in a few moments. And our hope and our goal is really to provide holistic settlement, attending to every dimension of people's lives as we help them get settled. We have a core host Christian Canadian couple living in each house. We're actually needing some core hosts right now. And so pray with us that God would bring along the next batch of core hosts to move in and help us with settlement. We do community building. We welcome refugees into not just houses, but into a community. And we help them move into more permanent, subsidized, or market housing at the end of their three-month time. Why don't you come and visit one of our community dinners on a Tuesday evening? Let us know in advance and we'll help make arrangements and you can see what is going on in those Olivet welcome houses next door. Well, housing is certainly a bottleneck in Metro Vancouver, and that's one of the biggest needs that we face right now. I was just reading yesterday that Burnaby had the largest decline in overall vacancy rates in 2019 from 2% to 1.3%. And Burnaby is the third most expensive rental market in Canada behind Vancouver and Toronto. And did you know that New Westminster's vacancy rate is even worse than Burnaby's? New West is at 1.2%. It's a huge bottleneck as we try to help families find a way after their initial three-month stay. And somehow, through the prayers of God's people, we just keep finding places in this crazy market to help families move into. Our hope is that we will be able to continue to even strengthen this partnership with Olivet and plan for the future in developing a vision for what can take place over there. So, what about the future? A possible vision. We saw earlier in our time this morning of the need, an increase in new arrivals in BC, mostly to Metro Vancouver, of almost 65% from 2018 to 2019. We helped 78 people out of that 3,700. Not insignificant, but still only 2% of all of those arriving. What is the need? Well, I wanted to share with you this morning as a prayer point, and I wrote it out on a slip to put in the offering plate. Here's what we face. We face emails constantly from people in various desperate situations around the world. Can you help us get to Canada? Here's our situation. What can we do? Can you find a sponsor for us? Sponsorship is not our mission. It's not our mandate. We help those who just show up as asylum seekers. But recently, we had an email from a family of asylum seekers in Mexico. I wanted to share anonymously a little bit of that email so you can see the kind of plight people are in. We vacation in Mexico, don't we? But we don't know how dangerous it is for many people, citizens of that country who are living there. Here's what she shares. My father was kidnapped by a very strong criminal group. I dare not mention them by this means. They were tending to force my father to work for them. They kill, kidnap, and only dedicate themselves to harm people. We don't want to participate in any of that activity. My father managed to escape, thanks to God. But while he was kidnapped, they got information from all my family. They know our names, addresses, schedules, occupations. They know everything about us. Now we are forced to hide like rats. We sell what we have left to survive. We cannot study, work, or even leave without the constant threat of being kidnapped, tortured, or killed. We have no choice but to leave the country. Thank God, after a lot of work, we got the money to leave Mexico. I would like to know if your kind offer to help us still remains. We are scheduled to arrive in Vancouver on January 20th. That's tomorrow. We are very short of resources, yet my family and I are happy to think that the little hell we have lived in these long months may end. We are still together, thanks be to God. We know that this is the most important thing. And then, can we count on your help? So, our houses are full. We don't actually have room for a family of seven. But I'm asking you to pray with me this weekend that somehow something would surface. And we can help yet another family arriving. We usually don't get emails from asylum seekers ahead of time. This is an unusual situation. But we just felt moved that somehow we have to try and do something. And so we're looking to see if God can provide for this next family. So friends, our work together is desperately needed. Can we commit ourselves together to continuing to provide hope for people, to welcome Jesus and take him into our community, into our homes, into our places, in the form of the refugees who come to us? Our plans, well, we're working on some meanwhile spaces, which means empty houses slated for development, empty buildings slated for development. We're hoping to put a grant together, hire some help, and see if we can build some housing inventory. We're also looking to develop a refugee claim and reception center. Do you remember a year ago when we talked about visioning together? And look at what's been happening in this past year. As we've been talking about this reception center possibility, as you've been talking about development of property, we're seeing how God is continuing to move us, I think, together in seeing how we can carry out and accomplish his plan of, I was a stranger, and you took me in. And so as we look at our partnership, as we meet together over these next months and over this next year, let's see where God's going to lead us and take us for the sake of refugees. There's opportunities right now. There's interest in society around housing in particular. I just saw another, I think it came across my desk on Friday, another opportunity to apply for grants for housing. Those are available. There is a window of opportunity right now that God is providing. How are we going to steward this opportunity together? Will we respond to God's invitation? And now for a short journey. My colleague, Laura, who is a settlement worker and been with us for a number of years, has written a piece that I want to share with you this morning because I think it gets at the heart of the refugee journey. And she put this together not because of one particular person's story, but as a compilation of her experiences of working with refugees over the years. And Laura's a social work background, and she says in sharing this, she wants to share her struggles in witnessing that the well-intentioned resources in Canada can themselves perpetuate oppression and re-traumatize the refugees that we care about. And she's chosen to focus this journey from a systemic perspective and the different bureaucratic systems that refugees need to navigate. And she says she will name her bias, that she brings a social work theory and perspective, that she comes from the lens of a white, middle-class, heterosexual female who's grown up with much privilege. But she says, I'm passionate about social justice and long for God's values of justice, mercy, and compassion to be the welcome that those fleeing persecution experience in Canada on a relational and systemic level. So here's the typical refugee journey upon arrival in Canada. Sit back, close your eyes if you will, but think of you being this refugee person. My plane lands at the airport, and I am filled with much fear and anticipation. I do not know a single soul in Canada. All of my family and friends are back in my home country, and I miss them desperately. Many of them I did not even get to say goodbye to. I hear that Canada is a compassionate country that helps people, and I am praying that this is indeed true. As I enter the line in the airport to be approved by the officers in black uniforms, many terrifying memories flood my mind and body of the police in my country. I work hard to prevent the images from taking over, but I begin to break into sweats and I can feel my heart racing. I am worried that my heart problems are starting to get worse again. It feels like forever for my turn to come up in line, and when it does, I freeze. I do not know what to say, and I do not know how to say it with my limited English. I slide the officer, who I later learn is the Canadian Border Services agent, my passport, which he soon learns is a false document. This is the start of many, many grueling hours of interrogation. I don't even remember what I said, as all of the information in my story feels jumbled as it spins through my mind. I do remember the outcome, and I could not believe it. And this happens. I was put in prison. I fled my country so that I would not be put in jail by the corrupt authorities. I arrive in Canada seeking protection and freedom, and they put me in jail. Don't they understand that the only way to get out of my countries is with a false document? My government was never going to issue me a passport and let me out by my own free will. And so I am transported to a prison where I spend the next week in prison with other criminals who terrify me. I don't know why they are there. It's dark, cold, and the food is awful. Each night I have night terrors, and each morning I wake up and I sit waiting, in fear for them to send me home. My days and nights began to feel mixed up, and at some point I am approached by an officer that if I want to make a refugee claim, I need to write out my entire story in a form, and I need to do it fast. I write the majority of my story in broken English, until I learn that I can have access to an interpreter to help me with the rest. 2 days later, they decide to release me, as they said that they have confirmed my identity. I hope that they did not confirm my identity with my home country. If my government finds out that I left, my entire family will be in great danger. I am taken to a big city and dropped off by Canadian Border Services Agency. Many questions run through my mind. Am I free now? Who will help me? Where do I sleep? What do I eat? I ask the taxi cab to take me to a low-cost hotel where I stay for the next 2 nights. I can only sleep for 2 hours each night as my memories keep me awake. I cannot afford to stay for the third night at the hotel, so I start walking around the city looking for help. I find a big settlement organization that says they help refugees, but I soon learn that they are not able to help me, which I don't understand. They say I'm not the right kind of refugee. They send me to the food bank, but all the food is in little packages that I have never seen and never eaten before. I try and eat a little, but I don't have much appetite. Then they give me the good news that they have found somewhere else for me to stay. They give me a bus ticket to go and meet some people from something called Journey Home Community. The people seem nice, and I meet the support worker, Laura, but again, I don't know if I can trust them. They ask me a lot of questions, and it's so difficult to remember all the answers. Why do so many people need to know so much about my personal life? I feel so tired and lonely. Journey Home tells me that they can help me and that I can be part of their community. I am encouraged that they can help me, but I don't know if they realize how much help I really need. One of the first things that Journey Home helps me with is applying for legal aid so I can have a lawyer at my refugee hearing. I am so thankful that I can have a free lawyer, but how do I even find a good one? When I find a lawyer, I again have to go through my entire story. Each time, I feel like I have to relive the worst moments of my life. My lawyer says we need to make lots of changes to the form I have filled out on my own in detention. My lawyer wants me to collect lots of evidence from my home country, but I have no idea how I'm supposed to do that. The system in my home country is corrupt, and I don't want to put my family in further danger. But I do need to prove to Canada that I am legitimately a refugee. I feel like I am living in a constant state of stress and uncertainty. Journey Home also helps me with applying for income assistance with some organization that has a really long name. I have no money and I want to provide for myself. I tell them that I want to work, but they tell me I can't. I feel powerless to provide for my own needs. I'm so glad that there is a government organization that can give me money to survive on. Maybe Canada is a generous place. It takes several weeks for me to get an appointment with income assistance. When I arrive at my appointment, I am told that I need to stand outside in the rain, even though I can see there's lots of room to stand and wait inside where it's warm and dry. At my first appointment, they tell me that I should have applied online, but Journey Home tells me I can't because I don't have a social insurance number. I wonder if Journey Home really does know what they're doing. The income assistance worker has me answer 100 questions and then tells me to come back in 1 week. When I ask how I am supposed to survive until then and request some money for food, I am denied. I go back the next week and hope that they will be able to give me some money for rent and food. At this appointment, they ask me what feels like 100 more questions. I feel humiliated. It seems like they think I have lots of money and assets hiding away, but I could not be going through this dehumanizing experience if I was not desperate for help. They again send me away empty-handed and tell me to come back. When I go back for the third time, I have to sign lots of contracts, and then they tell me to come back the next day at 11 o'clock to pick up a check. I come back the next day at 11, and I wait for an hour in line, and then they close for lunch, so I have to come back at 1 o'clock. I am so thankful when I finally get the check. I have money. However, I soon learn that it is not enough for me to live on. I have less than $3 a day for food. But maybe it's not a big problem, as I feel like I can't eat anyway. When will I feel hungry again? I feel bad asking Journey Home for more help, but I'm concerned about my heart problems. I feel reminded that I am in a country alone without my family and friends to help me in situations like this. I begin to panic as I need medication. Journey Home takes me to one of the only clinics where I can see a doctor. The doctor is helpful and compassionate, but tells me they only have a few samples of medication that I can have for free, which will last me a week. I am told that once I get a work permit, I can apply for provincial medical help, but apparently I can't get a work permit until after my medical exam. It is so challenging to navigate this system. The stress continues, but also so does the help and encouragement. I am thankful that Journey Home is able to temporarily help me with some medication. I am living in an ambiguous state of being so grateful, but also finding it more and more difficult to need so much assistance. The day of my hearing at the Immigration and Refugee Board arrives. At this point, the loneliness feels unbearable. I long for my family to be by my side, and I don't know when I will see them in the future. I cannot sleep or eat. I feel like I can barely breathe. Journey Home has blessed me with prayers and is coming to support me at the hearing by standing in solidarity with me. With courage, I tell my story. I answer the questions. I try to remember all the details of the moments that I long to forget. I find myself feeling confused and unsure of how much to share and when. By the end of the long day, my head is pounding, but I did it. I made it through the day. I learned that the decision will come in the mail. So I continue to wait. I continue to hope. The journey continues. And that's not an unrealistic journey. So friends, I'm here today to again say thank you, because this is the journey that we're addressing together. This is the opportunity we have to reach out to those who come to us, because that's Jesus arriving on our doorstep. And so as we look to these next weeks and months of trying to figure out what to do with those houses and that property, as we look to seeing what God wants to accomplish through us together, let's put in our best effort, but then let's also recognize that it doesn't depend on us. There is a God who hears and sees and cares, and He's leading us in this partnership and in this journey together. And I'm so glad that we're on the road. And I'm so glad that you have decided over these many years to continue utilizing your resources for the good of all of these who come to us. I'm available after the service. I'll stay around for a few minutes to chat if anybody has a particular question. I brought a couple things with me. If you're not on our Journey Home contact list and would like to be to receive our newsletter or updates, just contact us at the office. We'd be delighted to include you. I brought a few newsletters of our recent publication. And if you're interested in providing volunteer support, we've got some training days coming up. I have a few postcards for that. And let's see where God wants to take us in 2020. Would you pray with me?